Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Eurobytes. This is the March 24th, 2026 episode. I'm joined by Christian today, hailing in from the UK. I'm here talking about one topic, and this is, Christian, Iran. Is it the elephant in the room, or is it the big country shaped like one of these Scottish instruments? Or is it the country where Marines will attack, or is it the country where there's a new Ayatollah who has just come in and who might already be unalived, you know, after 2 weeks of intense attacks, or by now it's kind of like 3 weeks. We do need to ask ourselves, how is this special operation working? And dear Christian, thank you for being here with me today. Not here are Todd and Fabian, who will join us in a future episode again.
Right, Lucas. So you're asking, how is the whole operation going? And obviously, we can only, you know, put the fog of war mosaic together so well. The mere fact that it lasted longer than 48 hours shows that the whole operation is not going in the sense that certainly the Trump administration must have envisaged it. I think they were naive enough to believe that this is going to be another Venezuela. Be that as it may, obviously, I guess militarily it might be safe to say that if even the New York Times publishes pictures of destroyed American radar bases, I say that without any glee. I say that with sorrow, then yeah, it's not going very well. If increasingly after the Israelis put the lid on any sort of attacks, suddenly we're seeing pictures of hypersonic rockets raining on Tel Aviv and Haifa and such. So yeah, no, the whole operation is not going in the way that the Americans envisaged. I think it might be safe to say it is going probably in the way that the Israelis envisaged it. Why am I saying this? Because whenever Trump, I think, has pretty much after a week or maybe 2 weeks tried to find an off-ramp in the rhetoric where he's like, oh, it's going so well and, well, we're negotiating and, you know. Actually, the pattern is very, very terrible stuff happens on the weekend, and then come Monday before the markets open, he talks about peace stuff going on and the markets calm down only then on the weekend. All the interesting stuff is happening on the weekend. But what is quite clear that Trump tries to find an off-ramp and Israel tries to escalate. I mean, that was very clear when they attacked the Iranian oil installations, which again, I mean, this is who then retaliated dutifully against various Israeli installations and the whole Saudi and UAE and all the Emirates installations, which again, that is an escalation. And I mean, the Iranians made it clear that they've got room to escalate this up to the desalination plants, which again, I mean, if the escalation went there, I mean, we would have an unbelievable humanitarian catastrophe and world economic catastrophe. And I think that's what we focus on right now, the political sides. Again, you and I, there's only so much of the military stuff we can actually verify. But in terms of the economies, certainly in the UK, people start getting very nervous. And I drove to a gas station on Sunday. And interesting enough, you normally in front of a gas station, you've got these big signs that show you the gas prices. It was switched off. Oh. and I nearly fell off. Well, I nearly dropped the hose as I saw that, how the money was just running through. And so for Europe, and the whole rest of the world, who are much more dependent on liquefied natural gas from the Emirates and oil from the Persian Gulf, we are far more nervous than the United States. Yeah. And over to you. Yeah. Well, how are things in Germany?
And still, the gas prices also in the US have risen by a lot. Keep in mind that the Americans actually have decided to lift sanctions on Russian oil at this point. Much to the chagrin of my and our beloved Ukrainian prime minister, president, I think prime minister Volodymyr Zelensky, who also criticized Russia for sharing intel with Iran.
How could they do that?
You know, this is something we need to explain to American viewers and listeners. German TV is full of, what do you call them? Full of pundits, but not the American style pundits. You don't have Don Lemon or, this the woman with the short hair, Rachel Maddow. These kind of things, these kind of people. In Germany, you have experts. You have Carlo Masala. You have moderators who are like really asking the tough questions. So they out of nowhere come up with questions that you could envision yourself of. You could envision Volodymyr Zelensky becoming a German talk show host or interviewee. Like at one point, he's like, Russia should stop sharing intel because that's actually not fine. And this is one of the funny things. The Ukraine conflict somehow made it to was totally backdropped at this point. One more thing to add: Germany is still trying to help Ukraine a lot, but as far as I know, it seems like Germany doesn't have anything left to give. Which is also why Germany has refused to do anything regarding the Iran war. You know, when Federal Chancellor Merz visited U.S. President Trump some weeks ago, it was kind of fun that President Trump declared that Friedrich Merz was a friend of his, and he's very impressed with what he does. And Friedrich Merz was like, "Yeah, all is good." And you know, they even had these. They are the most German pictures ever made, where this walk along the Rose Garden, I think, in the White House, and Friedrich Schmidt standing there and like talking to President Trump. Yeah, and so you can tell that Friedrich Schmidt didn't have anything to say. And like 2 weeks later or 1 week later, when Friedrich Schmidt found himself back in Germany out of nowhere, he finally found himself to say, "Oh, this is not our war." And yeah. Take a look at the gas stations. It is our war. Let me just add one thing. While the U.S. have decided to tap their national oil reserve and have decided to ease the sanctions on Russia, many European countries have decided to also reduce the taxes on fuel. Now, I do need to look this up to be precise. But the interesting thing is the German authorities, so the German IRS takes 65 cents per pardon me. They take 65 cents per liter of gasoline. They take 47 cents per liter of diesel. Then there's also a federal carbon dioxide surcharge. There's VAT of 19%. So after all, in case a liter of diesel costs €2.30, according to the German equivalent to the AAA, the government gets 47 cents energy tax, 17 cents carbon surcharge, 37 cents of sales tax, which means that only 1.29 euros of 2.3 euros per liter of diesel actually go to the companies that explore the diesel, that refine it, that ship it, that sell it.
Could I make a case, and then European politicians, same in the UK, have the audacity to talk about these bad war profiteering oil companies, even though something, I think that the amount might be even crazier. So isn't the price almost like 70% taxes off?
For gasoline, it is 54%.
Right. Yeah, so, okay. We were
So they say that it's 58% with gasoline, 48% for diesel, which brings me back to my point. Now, every European country is doing something, or close to every country. You see where this is going. Austria decided to basically make a cap. Belgium has a cap. Italy has decided to reduce taxation and also to give out tax vouchers for like independent like transportation companies, which I think is an important thing. Germany, on the other hand, not only has the highest gas price in all of Europe, the government said, yeah, please watch out. There might be a shortage on gasoline in April coming. They haven't done anything. For the past 2 weeks, they have discussed whether they would only allow one price increase per day. This is everything. And the fun thing is, the only tax reform that Germany is thinking about right now is increasing the sales tax from 19 to 22%, which would mean that another 3% increase of the government's share in gasoline and diesel would happen, aka 61% of the diesel gasoline price is government tax, government imposed, and 58% of the diesel price is imposed. But you know, it's only the fault of the evil gasoline companies.
Profiteers, yeah.
Yeah, the German government is profiteering off its people, and it shows. Germany is one of the lowest growth rates in all of Europe. And let me tell you one thing, the rising gasoline prices, they don't improve. But I'd like to add one more thing and give it back to you. The German government has not found any certain position on Iran. Instead, they're just waiting for it to end, I think. What do you think? How's that in the UK?
It is interesting. So, I mean, the most loathed man in the UK is Prime Minister Keir Starmer, who's the most unpopular prime minister on record, or like since records existed in terms of popularity, because he managed to alienate everyone. I mean, he alienated the working class by talking down on them. You know, there were riots in a place after girls were killed and, you know, some sexually assaulted, and he would talk down to the bad working class. So he lost the working class. This is a special
report. Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At US Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. US Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
He lost the pensioners by trying to remove the fuel allowance for the pensioners in the winter. Interesting enough, it was one of his many U-turns. In the end, he alienated the farmers by trying to impose a ludicrous inheritance tax. Then he U-turned because the farmers had a brilliant campaign against that fantastic lobby work, and they mobilized Jeremy Clarkson. You might know him from Top Gear, who now has a farm and did the Lord's work, really, in raising awareness of what that meant to the farms. I mean, essentially old communist redistribution of farms and kind of making sure that farms got ever smaller whenever a farmer handed over a farm to his kids. So he's the least, and he does so many U-turns. So not a popular guy. But he then, for the first time ever since assuming government, found his spine. And he actually said no to the Americans. And then Donald Trump said, well, we don't need the Brits anyways, we're so winning. And suddenly Donald Trump did want the Europeans to open up the Strait of Hormuz. But the UK, to its eternal credit, you know, for all the talk of special relationships, held firm and said, no, this is, they kind of weaseled their way out of it. Why? But I mean, and And I think most other European countries kind of elegantly like, nah, we're going to sit that one out. And I mean, the interesting thing, I mean, you know, the examples about fuel prices were still quite lighthearted that Lucas and I mentioned, but it highlights a bigger point. Whenever a US administration starts its adventures in the Middle East, be that the second Iraq war, be that the ill-fated intervention into Syria, be that the ill-fated intervention into Libya, be that the involvement in Yemen, be that probably the intervention in Iran now, it's Europe that pays the price. Well, first of all, the local population pays the price, but then it's Europe that pays the price in millions of, well, some legitimate, but mostly fake refugees. It pays the price in terms of the gas prices, we said. So at the end, it's Europe that pays for it. And for the first time ever, at least our otherwise incompetent socialist governments have stood up and are not engaging in the military actions. But then the discussion varies. Obviously, in the UK, we've got Keir Starmer, the kind of weasels his way and doesn't really want to get involved, especially as the Muslim vote has become very popular for Labour. But also the right wing splits sort of a bit in like in the United States. You've got more the MAGA kind of crowd in the United Kingdom that says this is not our war, this is stupid. I heard the word retarded being used in one of the best UK right wing podcasts, The Lotus Eaters, with a brilliant analyst who's actually a Catholic guy from Lebanon. But you've got GB News, which is our version of Fox News, with all the boomer talking points. And they're like, no, how can we not support our best allies and, you know, get involved in this conflict? So this is kind of the interesting thing in Europe. So, yes, Europe, it will be the one paying the price one way or the other. The right, I think, is mostly divided between boomer talking points and more like MAGA talking points, like, this is not our war, this war is stupid. And this is, by the way, not a war in the United States' interest. This is fought for Israel. And by the way, your foreign minister said so. Oh, no, we only attacked because Israel was going to attack. So we had to attack. So they didn't attack us first, but they did anyways. Anyways, over to you.
Yeah, well, they attacked first, but keep in mind, the U.S. president says negotiations to end war happening right now. Iran is talking sense. Now, this was only brought to me after I read an old article on the BBC. You know, Christian, I want to ask you something. How did the whole foreign policy adventure come along over the past two presidencies, the 45th and the 47th? How's that wall coming along? You know, it's you mentioned MAGA boomers, or I think boomers are not MAGA people anymore. Boomers are evangelicals.
No, exactly. When I said the MAGA crowd, that's to me is more the classical Tucker Carlson crowd, intervention, and the boomers are more the evangelicals and neocons. Yeah,
absolutely. See, I don't have an issue with the neocons anymore. I think the neocons are more founded in their reasoning than evangelicals are at this point. The weird thing is, in German there's a saying, der Krug geht so lange zum Brunnen, bis bricht, which you would translate basically as the pitcher goes to the well until the pitcher goes often to the well, but is broken at last. And I think this is the point where evangelicals might find themselves. You know, people are promised so many things, and I'm having a hard time not growing tired of winning if I was an evangelical. I do seriously feel like this is a hard time at this point. Over the past years, we've always been very supportive and very, very outspoken about what's happening in the U.S. and that another Trump presidency will be beneficial to the U.S. And also to Europe. But at least for Europe, I have to say that I'm having I'm having a hard time finding how US policy and European policy can be aligned right now. And the whole Iran war does show that European governments actually have realized that supporting all these endeavors isn't, first of all, it's not giving them any votes anymore. Like, one thing that I'd like to focus on just for a second is European governments are also less keen on acting actively in these wars, I think, because the Muslim population has grown so much in our countries. Keep in mind, the French, the Spanish, and the British, I think, they all want to acknowledge Palestine as a country or something, because they know that they have such big Muslim populations that they'd have issues otherwise. Keep in mind that European right-wing parties have also become more acceptive towards Muslim immigrants, like Rassemblement National, for example, also at this point does have candidates that don't originate from like France initially, or whose families are not from France initially. But the thing that I just want to mention at last is, you said this regarding the refugees, that Europe is always suffering. You gave examples for like the second Iraq war. And here's one thing I want to add. This morning I came across a survey, and Kristen, you'll be surprised. You won't be surprised at the first numbers. 98% of AfD voters say they don't want any Iranian refugees. 80% of CDU voters say they don't want any more Iranian refugees. And even a majority of all parties except the Greens don't want any refugees from that region. And I find this is super interesting because the whole intervention in Iran was framed as a kind of like a humanitarian necessary thing, you know. For our American listeners and viewers, German foreign policy has rotated around the so-called responsibility to protect over the past years. Like, for example, when U.S. President Bill Clinton was suddenly found with an intern, he had to protect the Serbs from Serbia. So he had to attack a regional commuter train. It was just necessary. There's the same thing as right now. There's something happening, and Iranians need to be protected from Iranian government. The only issue is, keep in mind, President Trump stated that help will come. Or let me quote it. Trump on Iranian protesters. The U.S. president said on January 13th, 2026, help is on its way, and he urges them to keep protesting. And he also said that Iranian authorities will pay a big price. Days later, more than 20,000 Iranians were killed in demonstrations, and nothing happened.
I mean, it's.
I'm sorry to end my sermon with this, but it's like they were calling for help. They were told that they should get out in the streets. And they're just mowed down.
Yeah, I mean, and it is interesting, and I mean, I don't mean to laugh because obviously, but there's a comical aspect to it's undeniable, but I mean, let's not forget. I mean, there's so much human tragedy behind it. But the one group that time and again always stood with their trousers and their appendages flopping in the wind, so to speak, were the Kurds, which. After the first Gulf, we're like, hey, why don't you rebel a bit? Yeah, we might help you. Oh, yeah, no. And then again and again. And I think this time the Iranian Kurds have wisened up and didn't join. And I mean, again, I don't mean to laugh, but it's, I mean, yeah. but sometimes you have to, because it's so tragic. And I mean, it kind of shows that callous kind of thing that, And I mean, I'm so thoroughly disappointed in the Trump administration, because I hope it was actually the first administration. So the Trump one administration had many, many flaws. He clearly didn't understand how a political system worked. It didn't work like a company where you as the CEO say something gets carried out. I mean, that's why he had people like John Bolton in his cabinet. So Trump won, but Trump won at least didn't start any new wars, and he managed to even stomp out ISIS whilst he was at it. And I was had high hopes for Trump too, saying, hey, he might be the guy who would bring the peace to Ukraine, and that didn't happen. Maybe that's unjust. But I didn't think he was going to go to Iran, which had been the neocons' thinly veiled wet dream for decades. And now he actually did it. And time and again, it's sort of these U.S. adventures always work in the same modus operandi. You know, there's highfalutin plans. And I mean, and even the narrative of the Trump administration shifted. Oh, no, first we did it because the Israelis were going to go to. Then, oh, well, yeah, well, democracy, yeah, please keep demonstrating. And then it was the, oh, no, it's for against nuclear weapon. Whereas I would kind of venture, well, you guys killed the religious and secular leader of Iran, which again I think is very like killing a person, whether rightfully or wrongly, that people see as holy is generally a terrible idea. Killing that person that actually had a fatwa against nuclear weapons, I mean, you just killed the guy who was against nuclear weapon and had a religious fatwa, a religious edict against nuclear weapon. I'm like, so if that was really your aim. And then the other guy, Larry John, he was also a more moderate guy that would have been talked to, and the Israelis killed them. So again, I highlight my point. This is it's definitely not Europe's war, even though we're going to pay the price of it. It's not the United States war. This is Israel and the Israel lobby, I'm sorry to say. And that's what really greatly disappoints me with the Trump administration, because last year when they struck, you know, that nuclear facility, I thought there was a bit of that Trump deal-making magic, because he both placated the neocons in his administration, placated the Israelis. Yeah, we did something. But but also him and the Iranians kind of wink and a nod. Well, like, hey, we might actually attack you. Oh, yeah, you just did. And then the Iranians called, hey, we might attack your base. And I was hoping for something, but I never in my wildest dreams would have thought about an escalation of the proportion. And I mean, I would kind of still venture to say like administrations like the Barack Hussein Obama administration or the George W. Bush administrations, who were both equally terrible, and the Biden administration, which never was about Biden, their modus operandi was always get involved into military adventures and then see, oh yeah, well, that doesn't work out. Okay, bye, that's us. and the whole rubble remains. And then, yeah, sadly, this is going to be the same, because now Iran actually has wisened up how powerful it is. And now they're starting to introduce essentially a tank attacks, which I would be willing to make a bet that even after this military adventure is over, Iran will say, you know what, we kind of like the whole protection racket for tankers. I mean, it's kind of like a natural Panama Canal, for which we are now asking. I think the market going rate for a ship to go through at the moment is $2 million. I mean, you know, think about the thousands of tankers that make its way through that and, you know, do the math. And I mean, and I think that's, well, American politics, and I'm saying American because it didn't matter which administration actually did two things over the last couple of years. A, it made Iran more and more powerful after Gulf War I. Iran was more powerful with a big rival removed. After Gulf War II, Iran was even more powerful. Iran is now more powerful. And now let's talk about the other effect.
Yeah.
Not only does Europe lose, the Christians lose. So, I mean, interesting enough, whenever I met an Iraqi in a European city, whether that was Cologne or that was Amsterdam, it was always a Christian Iraqi. And it's the same. Pretty much Christians, by and large, except Egypt, are mostly gone from the Middle East. And that is definitely a result of these ill-fated interventions. So I'm like, is Europe, thanks a lot. We get lots of refugees. Our fuel prices shoot up, and by the way, you kind of managed to exterminate Christianity from what little remained of it in the Middle East.
So. Interestingly, speaking of exterminating Christianity, I think
this one important church, the Felsendom, what's it called in English?
Oh yeah, the Dome of the Rock.
The Dome of the Rock.
I'm watching my friends gain more and more weight. And then eventually I got to tell you, this is a little dark, but a bad diet literally killed my whole crew.
Wow.
Diabetes, a stroke. I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's like, you had a stroke? You're not even 50 years old. You guys got to quit eating this stuff. Your body knows what's what. You're right. Not conscious of this. But that's why people will go to the refrigerator and they'll grab this and that and the other and put together this outrageously elaborate combination of foods. Your body's trying to reach balance. Unbeknownst to us, our bodies are always trying to reach homeostasis. You can't eat all of this stuff and expect to live a long time. And one thing led to another, and I went, you know, forget this. We're going to make our own product. So we partnered with one of the world's top three biochemists where nutrition-specific study is concerned. I said, all I want is the best nutritional and immune support product in the world. So we mixed it in yogurt. It's a powder. I got a bag of it here. I keep one on the console all the time, you know, just so I can show people.
Yeah.
And it's a powder. Now, this is not candy. This is hardcore nutrition, and sugar is an enemy. And most people do not know that the reason these bellies are showing up on people all over the place, your body makes fat to store the toxins it can't get rid of. So it just puts them over here. But I can tell you this, you take this for 30 days and then lay off of it for 2 or 3 days, and you'll go, good grief, give me some more. Skin, nails, hair growing back. Cut yourself and it heals in half the time.
I think it is closed right now in Israel, right? I think for security reasons, you can.
It might be not up to date.
Let me check. The Dome of the Rock. Let's go for the news for this. Okay. Interesting. They don't say anything right now, but I've read that it has been closed for the past few days for like citing security reasons. One thing that I can cite with the source is do you remember that sentence, Kamala is sending our children to war?
Yeah, I do.
Let me quote Vice President Vance, who does make some good statements. Now, I don't want American evangelicals who might be listening to be foaming and fuming at Eurobytes, because Eurobytes loves you, and we hope that you love Eurobytes.
No, we love our evangelical brothers and sisters, so that's not the point we're making. Yeah,
the only issue, like, J.D. Vance will always have a special place in my heart for having made this perfect statement at the Munich Security Conference 2025, you know, where he explained things like there's no complete freedom of speech in Germany. And let me say one thing: you're always welcome to try and figure out whether there's full freedom of speech in Germany. You know, ending my sentence at this point.
Well, curiously enough, a lot of stuff is happening, and when it comes to freedom of speech, obviously it's ever vanishing ever quicker. And now that I say something positive about our otherwise loathsome Prime Minister Keir Starmer, he, on the good side, as I said, he refused to participate in this military adventure, but the UK wouldn't have had the means to do it anyway, so there's that. But he now introduced a new blasphemy law, essentially, in all but a word for Islam. So whenever you could do something that could be vaguely interpreted as criticizing Islam, or that could be interpreted as meaning people of Muslim descent, you get into massive legal trouble. This is another reason why I hate unnecessary wars, because they suck up all the oxygen, and at the same time we're sailing further and further into the totalitarian nightmare in Europe, with again free speech vanishing. If you criticize certain religions, if you criticize certain groups, this it gets harder and harder to do that, even if it's not from a racist point of view. But again, all this stuff, we've got Ukraine as the one big distractor, and we've got now that unnecessary war in Iran as the other big distractor. And then, so meanwhile, our politicians, such as Keir Starmer, side with the newly imported population. And by the way, you did mention the Green Party in Germany, the UK Green Party, essentially, in all but name, has also become the Muslim Party. There is a new leader of the Green Party in the United Kingdom, Mr. Polanski. And Mr. Polanski used to be a hypnotherapist.
Polanski, the guy that...
Yes, like him. And Mr. Polanski...
Criminal, okay.
Used to be a hypnotist that helped to hypnotize women so their breasts would grow larger, and now this quality human being is leading the Muslim Party. And there was a recent by-election where for the first time ever a Green Party direct candidate made its way to the UK Parliament based on the Green Party overtly going for the Muslim vote. So
Curry Road in Birmingham?
Not in Birmingham. It was a place near Manchester, I think, called Denton and Galton, something like that. No. It wasn't the Curry Mile in Birmingham.
This needs to stop. This is something interesting for the American viewers and listeners. President Trump is rightfully angry at the squad. Now, these are like 4 out of 435 Congress people. Let me tell you one thing. We even have a Muslim governor about to happen. The Muslims don't like him, and he doesn't like the Muslims. He's a Green member, but he's like a crypto Green. But still, how do Americans feel about an un-American governor? Not saying that Cem Özdemir is not a real Badenza or Schwabe. I don't really know where he's from. But Americans, please realize that the real issues are happening right here, right now, every single day. Now, Kristen, I want to come up with one more quote. And this quote is, Does anybody want to get drafted in the audience? This is what President Trump asked on September 13th, 2024, because that's what they're doing. She's already talking about bringing back the draft. She wants to bring back the draft and draft your child and put them in a war that should never have happened. Now, if you have an American kid, chances are that your American kid who is enlisted, obviously not drafted, but who's enlisted based on his or her free will, is actually part of the expeditionary force that might be sent to Iran, because the war is won, Christian. Yeah. And the war is won. They need to win even harder. No, seriously, I love the first presidency. You know, the first presidency was great because it felt unscripted. And this presidency right now feels kind of like it is too well scripted. It feels like it's a professional presidency. It doesn't feel like a reality show anymore. It feels like a scripted reality. And I love so many of the ideas that the US president and vice president come up with. And I also like certain people in the government. They're really cool guys. They do great. They're trying to improve the livelihoods of so many Americans. I even have to say that even my more left-wing or left-leaning acquaintances, they're even like, oh, yeah, you know, RFK Jr., he's weird when it comes to vaccinations, but he's really doing well when it comes to nutrition. There's so many great things to be talked about in this current administration, but based on like, the things that are really being put out and where the bell is being rung, these are things where I don't understand how American voters are happy right now. Not at the gas pump, not at looking at the map. These are interesting times. Isn't this the Chinese death wish, kind of like
at least the curse? Yeah,
yeah, the curse may live in interesting times.
And I think
go ahead.
I think we definitely are. I mean, probably it's good a moment to have, like weave in our final thoughts for the night. Yeah. And
Yes, I do have final thoughts for the night, and this is that I'm curious how the MAGA movement is developing. I think it's important to keep, for President Trump, to keep the MAGA people on board. Keep in mind though that MAGA does not mean turbo capitalism, and also does not mean efficient capitalism. Like, I think the classical MAGA sympathetic voter is someone who would be at home in like in Europe, between somewhere in the European conservative area. You know, Germany has this funny economic system, the Ordo liberalism. Now, for American viewers and listeners, we call it social market economy, and it's actually a pretty okay thing. It's helping people ensure that the free market is happening. Like, it is not perfect. Keep in mind, when they came up with it in the 50s, the markets were a lot freer, and people had a lot more opportunity to actually get, I don't want to say get rich, but get from rags to riches, for people to buy their own plot of land, to build their own house, to retire in their early to mid 60s, to see their kids and grandkids grow up, to share the wealth with them. This is the dream of many MAGA voters, I think. The classic, keep in mind, the classic MAGA voter in 2016 was someone who was excited for industry to come back. The industry hasn't come back. The new friends that the president is surrounding himself with are different friends than back in the day. You had Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon was mainly replaced with J.D. Vance, with Elon Musk. I can't really say anything about this. Is this good or bad? You need to figure out for yourself. But I do think the MAGA movement is at a crossroads, and my thoughts for tonight. Do you know Interstellar, the movie?
I just know the soundtrack because I'm a big fan of Hans Zimmer, our great fellow countryman. So yeah,
it ends. I think it ends with a poem of the Welsh poet Dylan Thomas, and the first line is "Do not go gentle into that good night," and I think this is what MAGA voters need to keep in mind. Do not go gentle into that good night. You don't know what's happening. You need to be on the lookout. That's all.
How about yourself? Hold your president true to what originally the ideals of the movement were.
Yep.
I mean, it's the same with European populist movements. We're just in the UK. We're seeing the split between Reform UK and Restore Britain, where Reform UK had become sort of a boomer-esque version, and actually Reform UK supported getting involved into Iran, whereas Restore Britain under Rupert Lowe says, no, we've got so much to sort out here. I mean, cities to rebuild, communities to rebuild, industry to bring back in the UK even more so than in the United States. So in that sense, if you've got the feeling that the movement's corrupted, you know, just hold your congressmen and politicians true and true to their words. And I guess today was very politics heavy and Iran heavy, and hopefully once our religious correspondent Fabian is going to be back, we will talk about that as well, because a lot is happening in Europe in either direction. Some very, very bad stuff, some very, very good stuff in terms of revival of Christianity. I'm looking forward to the next episode.
I have one last thing to say. I just was able to remember this great poem by Bertolt Brecht, and it feels like it's the solution not only for left-wing governments but also for the people who we sometimes hope are doing a good thing for us. Would not in that case it be simpler for the government to dissolve the people and elect another?
That's what European governments are doing.
That's what they're doing, but you know, as an American, this it rings home a message, and I hope that I hope that Americans realize that there's a lot to be fought for. Because come to Europe, see how things are, and you'll see why you need to fight. And well, this is all. Thank you so much for being here with me, Christian. And thank you, dear listeners and viewers, for joining tonight. This was Eurobytes. Take care.
Thank you.